How many of you have heard about, traditionally speaking, that at the gates, there are what is known as the pearly gates? Heaven is known as the pearly gates, and there is Saint Peter sitting at the pearly gates, and he is going to scrutinize everyone who comes over there. Are you aware of that? Yeah, there's a traditional belief that is there. And one wonders, what are the questions Saint Peter might ask before we are let inside the pearly gates? And so there are various jokes on various stories of what might be the questions Saint Peter might ask before you are allowed inside. Sure, Andy will not mind if I tell this. One one man came at the gates of heaven, and the Saint Peter asked him. He says, "You have to answer one question. If you answer that question right, then you will be allowed to get inside." So he said, "All right." So Saint Peter said to him, "What is the name of the Lord?" So the man said, "His name is Andy." So Saint Peter got a shock. He says, "Andy?" He said, "Yes." He says, "What makes you feel his name is Andy?" He said, "We always talked about Andy and sang about Andy in our churches." So Saint Peter says, "Tell me one song that you sang about Andy." He said, "And he walked with me, and he talked with me." Anyway, so there are some people who might think Andy is the one, that is the name. And another one says that another man entered the, came towards the gate of heaven, and he said, Saint Peter said to the angel, "Check his record." He said, "This man was a miser, he never gave a single paisa to anybody." So the angel says, "But I'm looking at his record." He says, "Never once has he has given any money to anybody." But then he looked to the record. He says, "No, no," he says, there is one 25 paise coin he has given to a beggar." So Saint Peter says, "How come this man decided one day to give 25 paise to the beggar? Please check the record." So the angel checks the record. He says, "No, no, one day he got some change after he paid his fare. And as he was putting money in his pocket, one 25 coin rolled out. And it rolled and went towards the beggar who was there. By accident it went there." Saint Peter said, "Oh, that explains it." So he said to the angel, "What does the record say? What should we do if a man has given 25 paise? Is he allowed to go into heaven?" So the angel looked in the record and said, "According to our schedule, give him back that 25 paise and send him to hell." So anyway, so those are various questions that people ask. Someone says, "If we went to the gates of heaven, what are the questions Saint Peter might ask us?" I don't know whether he'll ask us, "Do you know Psalm 23? Quote Psalm 23 without fault in King James Version, and then we'll be allowed to enter inside." Or maybe you have to tell the names of all the 12 disciples of Jesus. Do you all know the names of 12 disciples? I also don't know. Or worse still, if he's in a bad mood, he might say, "Okay, you have to quote Psalm 119. All the 176 verses, we'll be in trouble." Or if he were to ask you whether you are, what is your view of eschatology? Are you a pre-millennial or amillennial or post-millennial? That question itself might go over the heads. So we would be in real difficulty if you were to ask. The question arises as to, if you were to reach those gates of heaven and we were judged, what might be the way God might judge us? So that is the question. Think about it. I am now 23 years in the ministry, and I wonder whether if I reach the gates of heaven, will that be adequate or not? I don't know. Or I can say I have finished 36 years as a Christian. Will that be adequate or not? I don't know. We'll find out. And while I ask about myself, you can ask about yourself. What could be the whole thing? If I were to claim that, "Oh, I have read the Bible maybe 10, 12, 15 times through and through from cover to cover," will Saint Peter be happy? He said, "Oh, that's good enough. You can enter in." And we need to look into that place. And for this, we need to see at the parables that are written for us in Matthew 25. Now, because this is an LTP meeting, I am presuming that you are all familiar with this this passage of Matthew 25. And if I just allude to it, you will quickly follow that. There is this parable of 10 virgins, and you know about the story of 10 virgins. 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. Do you remember why the 5 were called foolish? Did not carry the extra oil. All had lamp. All had a witness. All had the lamps. All had the oil for the lamp, but didn't have the extra oil. So their planning system was not very good. Their preparation was not very good. And so the bridegroom delayed in coming. I don't know why it get delayed, but there is always a delay. And we say in Indian language, Bhagwan ke darbar mein der hoti hai, andher nahi hai. Der hai, lekin andher nahi hai. That means there can be delays, but there may not be darkness. Meaning thereby, it looks like according to our timetable, he is delayed. He comes as his correct time. He says Jesus came in the fullness of time. He didn't come one day late, one day early. But to us, that delay in answer makes us feel that God has delayed in his coming. But he comes at the precise time and everything flows very well. But as the bridegroom delayed this, they went to sleep. And when the bridegroom came at an unexpected hour, and then the problem arose by which their lamps were running out. The 5 lamps of the foolish ones were running out. They asked for the oil from the other friend. They said, we don't have enough to share. We have just enough for our setup. And so they had to get and fetch the oil. But they could not come in time, by which time the bridegroom arrived. The 5 wise virgins went with him, and the doors were shut. When these women arrived later on, they knocked on the door. They heard a terrible answer, which says, depart from me, I don't even know you. And so that's a very awkward illustration, example, but that is what Jesus gave. So your first fill in the blanks concerning the 10 virgins would be, I need to be ready because Jesus may return anytime unexpectedly. Jesus may return anytime unexpectedly. That is the first one. The second one is the parable of the talents given in Matthew 25. Okay, the first one is Jesus may return anytime unexpectedly. The second one is the parable of the talents. Jesus told that illustration of a man, an owner, who gave 5 talents to somebody, 2 talents to somebody, and 1 talent to somebody. He didn't divide it equally. He gave it in different proportions. And he says, do business till I come. And he went away on a faraway place. And then the man who had 5 talents, we know that he earned, he put his business, he put the talents to use. Talent is supposed to be a very large sum of money. Apparently it is worth quite a few lakhs of rupees. So he gave him a large sum of rupees. And he made business with that. And it so happened that the business worked, and that 5 talents became 10 talents. He got 100% result out of that. The second man also did that. With 2 talents he put to use, and he got 2 talents more. He also got 100% result. But the man who had 1 talent, he had an attitude problem, and he decided not to do business with that. Instead, he just kept it hidden somewhere. And when the master came back, he says, this is the conversation there. The man who had a 5 talent said, Master, your 5 talent has earned 5 more. Means the money you gave me attracted that much more. He didn't say, I made the business. He said, your talent has got 5 talent more. And the master said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And you've been in charge of 10 cities because you've got 5 into 10. And the other guy also said he has 2 talents. And he said, your 2 talents got 2 talents more. And the same commendation was made, given by the owner. He says, well done, thou good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of the Lord. And he also was welcome. And then this guy with 1 talent came. He says, I know you are a hard taskmaster. I know you are a hard taskmaster. You harvest where you have not sown, and you gather where you have not scattered. And so I took this money and I hid it, and here is your money back. So question comes, was the master a hard taskmaster? What do you think? Was he a hard taskmaster? You have eaten too much biryani. No. Some people say no. Some people are nodding their head. Perhaps he was a hard taskmaster. He says, you are a hard taskmaster. You gather where you have not scattered, and you try to harvest where you have not sown. That's what he says. Was this the attitude of the owner? Was he expecting something out of nothing? He was expecting something of what he had given you. Right? So it was legitimate for him to expect. So he was not a hard taskmaster. He had given the ability, he had given the resources, and he was expecting from that something to be used. Is that okay?
But this man perceived him to be a hard taskmaster. So, see, he was not industrious. He was not willing to take the risk. He was not working. And therefore, because he's not working, instead of saying that I was lazy, instead of saying that I did not do any work, he's saying to the man, you are a hard taskmaster. So according to him, who has to change? Taskmaster's change. So he ends up accusing his master. But notice what he's saying. He's actually deceiving himself. He said, I know you are a hard taskmaster and that you gather where you don't sow and you know. So if you know that your boss is hard, you better work hard, isn't it? If you are a hard taskmaster and you expect something from me, and if I don't give it, you are going to really put me to trouble. That's the meaning. So I immediately went and started doing something about it. But instead he's saying, so I took and hid it. So which means there is not only he's accusing him wrongly, but he's also saying, I am defiant, I won't do what you want me to do. I won't allow you to gather where you have not sown. So that is there is a wickedness involved in that. Are you with me so far? So you can see how that man's explanation looks wrong because of his statement. And his master said, out of your own mouth I will judge you. See, you yourself have proved wrong by your own statement. If you knew I was a hard taskmaster, why didn't you give me some interest at least? At least you'd have given me the basic interest. The saving banks give you 3.5. Fixed deposit gives you maximum 5.25, if you keep it for 3 years. At least you'd have got this much. If you had done some good in business, I could have got 100% like these two guys give it. But at least you would have given me 3.5 or 5.25. Something at least you had given me. You did nothing. You didn't even put it to the bankers for interest. And so, he declares one very deadly decision. He said, throw him into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. And he says, take that talent and give it to the one who has 10 talents. And the people said, but he already has 10. He said, yes, those who have more will be given. And those who don't have what they had, that also will be taken away because they did not put to use what was given to them. So, for the second fill in the blanks, the talents need to be found busy when Jesus returns. Need to be found busy when Jesus returns. Now, using these two talents, before we go for the third before I go to the third parable, let us just tie up a couple of loose ends of this parable. I ask us a question. Has Jesus given us any talents? Don't have to answer. Just have to think. Has Jesus given us any talents? Has Jesus given us any gifts? Has Jesus given us any blessings? Has Jesus given us any resources? Has Jesus given us any ability of special kind? And if that is the case, you know that at the end of the time, He is going to ask us about an account of our ability to handle what He has given us. So when He asks us, what will be our answer? Will our answer be like the guy who had 5 talents? Will our answer be like the one who had 2 talents? Or will our answer be like the one who had the 1st talent? I have not done basically anything about it. And if he says that answer, what will be the destiny of ours? Will it be like the 1st guy, 2nd guy, or the 3rd guy? You got to think about it. Let me just give you some statistics that might help you. You don't have it in your notes. It's there only in teacher's notes. So the statistic says that if today, before coming to church, if we had breakfast, then praise God, for millions of people die each day of starvation. If we got up this morning with health, more health than illness, then we are blessed because 1 million who will not survive this week in hospital or on the street. If we have food in our refrigerator, clothes on our back, then we are richer than 75% of the world's population. If you can read these notes of a lecture, then we are blessed than the 2 billion people in the world who cannot read at all. If we can hold our head and smile, then we are blessed because the majority of people cannot do that, for they are hurt, depressed, crushed under poverty, etc. In other words, we are more blessed than the largest number of people on the face of this earth. We are richer than 75% of the people on the face of this earth. We are healthier, even though if we are taking tablets and have aches and pains, we are more healthy than more people that are there on the face of this earth. If we are literate, then we are more blessed than maybe 2 billion people who cannot read or write. And so, we are far, far better off and more richer than anybody else. You agree with me? So tell your friend, I am richer than I thought. So if you have complained while coming in the rickshaw here, for anything that is there, you need to say, I am better off than what I thought. Just tell your neighbor, I am better off than what I thought. Now the one who told you that you are richer and you are better, you tell them, more is expected to whom more is given. Now have conviction, just say that as a Bible verse, you can quote that. Now say it with conviction, say it with passion, say it with zeal. More is expected to whom more is given. Is the person who is listening coming under conviction or not? I don't know. The point is a very deadly point. What are we doing about the talents we have? Is a very serious question, and we need to know what is the answer for that. Now let's look at Matthew 25 verses 31 to 33, which I think I've given in your notes. Let's read that and see what happens there. First of all, that point says there will be a day of judgment. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, He will sit on His throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him and He will separate the people one from another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on His right and the goats on His left. So, we do not know when that day of judgment will be, but we must always be prepared. We must always be prepared. We are not told when Jesus will come to judge. Nobody knows the time and the hour, but we all should be prepared. Stories told of a young lad who was hired by a farmer, and he was working with the farmer for a number of days. And one of the days the farmer had a chat with the young lad. He said to him, what is your specialty? Just tell me your specialty. And the young lad says, well, my specialty is I can sleep when the wind blows. So the farmer said, beg your pardon? He says, tell me again. He said, I can sleep when the wind blows. And the farmer didn't know what he meant. And he left it to that. Because he thought he would be foolish to ask this question again. It looked like this young lad knows something and this old farmhand doesn't know anything. So, number of days passed by when one day they got hit by a terrible storm. Some of you may have read recently in Florida they had a terrible storm. They periodically get some severe storms. So one day there was a very severe storm that hit that place. And both the farmer and his wife got up. But when they got up, the first thing they noticed was this lad was sleeping. And so they were a little irritated, but they decided to just have a look and then, you know, wake this fellow up and fire him. So when they got up to see all the animals, they found that all the animals were kept very well secure. In fact, the animals were resting. All the doors were bolted properly. The grass was kept for them to feed. There was no problem in that area where the farmyard animals were kept. They looked into the garage and all the vehicles were kept. The tractors and all of the plowing equipment was safely secured, securely locked and firmly in place. They looked into the where the firewood was kept. There was firewood stored very well, and near the fireplace also there was firewood kept, and there was enough to keep it stoking for the whole night. There was no problem at all. And as the farmer went around, he found that everything was in place. There was nothing to worry about. You know, when you harvest the crop and if it is left on the ground and if there is a big flood, then all your harvest will rot. So farmers are known to kind of tie them in bundles and keep them at a height up above. So when he went to see, he found that all the crop was stored high up, not kept on the ground level. So there was no problem if there was a terrible flood either. And when he looked at everywhere, found everything secure, he found that this lad need not have to be woken up. There's no need to wake him up. Then he remembered when the lad says, when the wind blows, I can sleep. That he was prepared thoroughly for the hour of the storm. He didn't have to worry. He didn't start preparing for the storm when the storm came. He was prepared well in advance for the storm. When we are advertising the foundation course, we say foundation course is meant for storms. You see that story that Jesus said, he who listens to my words and put them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. He says, when the rains came, that means pressure came from the top, and the floods arose, that the pressure came from bottom, and winds beat against the side, that means the pressure came from the side, that means there's a three-dimensional attack that came. He says, then the man who built his house on the rock didn't have to worry because his house stood firm. Foundations are there for the stormy days. Foundations are there when for difficult times. We build the foundations now, but when the storms come, we don't have to worry at all. Right now in Kolaba, they have been doing some skits for the foundation course. So 3-4 weeks before the foundation course starts, they are having a lot of skits and dramas. So one of the skits is they come with rubber tires. You know, two men come rolling a rubber tire in the church hall. And one of them is making a peep, 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 peep sound, and they're all going around in the front area. And then one of them said, shh, and he kind of sits down. And so the other guy is, you know, still rolling his tire, and he says, what happened? He says, this tire, it always gives me problem. It always breaks down. He says, but I've never seen your breakdown. What is the key? So he picks up the tire, lifts it up, and he says, try FC tire. It will help you in times of trouble. And then, of course, the leader announces that we are starting an FC course, sure to guarantee you have no trouble when you are going on the highway. And therefore, they bring two guys, one is saying, I've got a lot of trouble, I've got a lot of problem, a lot of difficulties, I've got suitcases full of trouble, and I've got a headache, and I've got a problem. To which the other guy says, have you tried the FC tablet? He said, what is the FC tablet? He said, you never tried, try this. He said, he gives him something, and he takes it, and he says, all problems gone. He says, really? You like it? He says, like it? Then keep one more, give it to your friend as well. And he says, FC tablet cures all your problems. Welcome to our new batch that is starting next week onwards. And now they've got 49 people registered for the foundation course, by the way. So the foundation course is meant for the stormy days. Foundations is meant for the difficult times. And therefore, this lad is saying, I can sleep when the wind blows, because he's prepared for that wind. He's prepared well in advance. He's not running around at the last hour. So there is that sense of preparedness that is going to come. The only thing is, storms never announce when they'll come. They just come when they want. So we got to be prepared now. And that is the crucial part of our preparation. We need to be very sure now before the whole thing happens. A story is told of the man who was going on the highway and may not be having the FC tire, so his car broke down somewhere. So he walked on a certain distance before he could find a house. So he walked a considerable distance and he saw one beautifully kept estate, a beautiful kept farmyard. And he was appreciating all along as he walked this long, long estate that is there. Very immaculately kept, very thoroughly kept. And finally he came to the main entrance where there was a nice, beautiful bungalow there, and he knocked on the door to find some help. And from the back of the bungalow, the side room, one man came up and he says, what's the problem? So he says, I'm a man driving on the highway. My car has failed. I've come to find out if I can find some help. And he asked the man, are you the owner of this estate? He said, no, sir, I am the keeper of this estate. Oh, he said, you are the keeper of the estate. May I speak to the owner? He says. He says, sir, the owner has gone away and he's not at home. He says, will he be coming in a little while? He said, no, he's gone away for the last few years and I don't know when he's going to come. And he says, he's gone away for all this and you are the keeper of this place? He said, yes. He says, the way you are kept the place immaculate, it looks like you're expecting him tomorrow. He said, no, sir, I'm expecting him today. I every day prepare the place as if he's coming today. Now that is the posture of the keeper of that estate. He is ready as if he's coming today. Not tomorrow, as if he's coming today. And that is a sense of preparedness that is a crucial part. And so a question I have to ask us from this preparation is that, because there is absolutely sure a day that is going to be day when there is going to be a judgment, we got to be ready when that day comes. But we do not know when that day is going to come. And that is the trouble. Nowadays, every day you are reading in the newspaper about hit and run. And so who knows? And then Thana Highway, some hit and run has taken place. By the way, some of you may know Rashmikant. Now Rashmikant's father went yesterday to the shop. And while he went to the shop to buy something, he suddenly had a severe pain in his chest and he had an asthmatic attack. And then he collapsed on the near the shop and he expired yesterday evening. And today evening, 4 o'clock is his funeral. Now, point I'm making is that you never know when our hour will come. Now, I don't know when Jesus will come, but as far as many of us are concerned, if we die tonight, then our opportunity is today, not tomorrow. Our opportunity is not when we are 75 years old. our opportunity or our hour of opening is now, not later on. So we got to be prepared, not tomorrow, not next year, but now, today. And from this day onward, this is the hour of salvation. Today is the day of salvation. So we got to be, today be the day when we got to experiment with whatever we want to do. That would be our suggestion. Prepared for the day of judgment, because you do not know, as we read from the previous parable, you do not know Jesus may return anytime unexpectedly. He wants to find us busy. We do not know when that will be, but we must be prepared. Not only that, the next one says that judgment involves everyone who has ever lived. Judgment involves everyone who has ever lived. Which means all of us who are seated here are going to face the day of judgment. There is no one here who can be exempted. I mentioned that I am so many years in the ministry or so many years a Christian. I will also have to stand in the queue over there for the day of judgment like anybody else. And I would be asked the same question like anybody else. No one can say, I am a man, I am a woman, or I had this duty, I had that duty, so I could not do what I expected to do. There is no excuse that will be allowed, because all of us will have to stand before the day of judgment. So that is the other part. Judgment involves everyone who ever lived. People from all walks of life, no one will be exempted from that judgment. All nations will be gathered on the final judgment day, and we will be there. Thirdly, judgment involves separation. Judgment involves separation. Judgment involves separation. This passage that I read, it says, as the shepherd separates the sheep and the goats, he is going to separate the sheep and the goats. Now, question I'm asking, you don't have to answer. Are we sheep or are we goats? Are we sheep or are we goats? The next portion will decide whether we'll go to the right, because if we are sheep, we'll go to the right, or if we are goats, we'll go to the left. And what category will define a sheep or a goat is a crucial question. So there will be a separation. Perhaps we are all together, but at that moment of time, there will be separation. And that separation brings us to the next passage, and that is, there will be a reward for the righteous. And let me read for us Matthew chapter 15, verse 34 to 40, given in your notes. And the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, invited you in, needed clothes and clothed you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did it for me. So, here is the question, who is a sheep and who is a goat? I mentioned to us in fun at the start of the talk by saying, will we be asked question about eschatology? Would we be asked to quote scriptures of Old Testament or New Testament? Will we be asked the names of the apostles? Would we be asked whether it is premillennialist or amillennialist or none of these? The simple, absolute, simple, down-to-earth question is, did we care for those who are less privileged? I already quoted for you statistics by saying that we are better off, we are richer, we are healthier and literate than most people on the planet Earth. And we are living in a city like Bombay or Thane, which are the richer constituencies than the rest of India is concerned. We are drawing salaries far better than many of the people in the nation. We are getting privileges and facilities far better than other people. And did we care for those who are lesser privileged than us? That is the bottom line of the whole question. So the deciding factor of sheep and goat is not how many years of ministry, nothing else, but did we do the simple things or not? And what is the benefit to those who are called righteous? And this is the benefit. It says the righteous will inherit the kingdom. The righteous will inherit the kingdom. Secondly, the reason for the reward is they gave generously without calculating the cost or uncalculated. They gave generously uncalculated. Space is less, therefore I'm giving you a short word. But basically, I want to say give generously without counting the cost. They gave without the thought of reward. They never knew that there would be a reward involved. They just gave without the thought of reward. And they gave in simple things that was needed. They gave in simple things. Could they give a glass of water to someone? They could give that. That's what we can do. We can do that simple thing. You know that even the poorest of poor can help. How much more us? You know, this is an American story about a Salvation Army run, feeding center was there. And so the poor of the town would come to the Salvation Army to get a big breakfast in the morning. And all the poor people would come and they would have a wash at the bath that was at the bathroom that was there. They would comb their hair and, you know, get a bit neater. This was the facility provided at the Salvation Army center. And then, of course, the Salvation Army officers would be there and they would sort of cook a morning breakfast for them. And then a little later, all those poor people were fed. And it so happened that poor people came regularly and were fed, had a wash, etc. One day, while the poor people had gathered and had just begun their morning wash, they found that one man was passing by and he had three children with him. And he looked at this place and there was an officer standing at the door, at the gate, and he looked at this man. The man looked inquiringly, so the officer began to talk to this man and had a conversation with this man and then said, come on in. He brought this man inside with his three children and he said to all the so-called poor people, he says, this man tells me as I met him at the door that his wife is in the hospital across this road. She has been admitted and she is sick for last so many days. And he has come from that hometown over here, but having overstayed, he's run out of money and he's got no food to eat. So I've told him he's welcome to come and have breakfast with us. So you have one more friend among yourself. And so this man sat down along with all the other beggars, along with his children. He sat down while the officer went inside to prepare the breakfast. And as all the beggars sat down, looked around, looked at his three children, then one child was very small. And so one beggar lady took this child to the wash basin area and began to wash the face of this child. And so the looking at this lady do, there's another lady picked the other slightly bigger grown daughter whose hair had not been combed for so many days because mother was sick in the hospital, seriously ill. And she took out a comb and began to comb this girl's hair nightly put on. At which point the third guy saw this, he went to the inside and he, as soon as the breakfast got ready, he took the breakfast out and first he served this four members, the father and the three children. And then all of them began to sort of wait upon these four people. And then one guy went inside the officer and said, you said this guy had no money? He said, no, he had whatever money he has all spent on his wife and his child. So he told the officer, then why don't you give him some money? So the officer said, it is our policy of Salvation Army. We will give food, but we don't give money to anybody. So then this man went around whispering in the ears of all the beggars, and then they were doing something, and then after some time, as this man stood up with his children to go, this beggar man said, we felt necessary to collect a small gift for you, and all these people have contributed, and here is the money you can use for your wife to treat your wife well. And then he took it. At which that man who stood there began to cry, because he never expected these poor people will be able to give him. He wept and wept, and he says, I have never seen such love and such generosity. And as he began to cry, all the beggars also began to cry. And then as he walked towards the gate and he looked back, he found all the beggars were crowding near the door. And then he waved, and then all the beggars were waving and all the beggars were crying. And then he went away and all the beggars sat down. And then by then the officer says, your breakfast is ready. But no beggar was moving towards the breakfast. And the beggars were saying, I do not know, today is the happiest day of my life. I've been enjoying this breakfast, but I've never enjoyed like today, giving to someone who is more needy than ours. And one beggar says, that officer always tells us it is always more blessed to give than to receive.
He says, could be that is the reason we found it is more blessed to give than to receive. And one beggar says, why don't we start a beggar's fund that we can contribute out of our meager belonging so that those who are less privileged, we can give something to them. He said, yeah, that's a good idea. And so they began a project from that day onwards. Now folks, what I want to say is, always you will find someone lesser privileged than what we are. And always we have an opportunity for us to give. We cannot say, if those beggars could contribute, how much more can we contribute? How much more can we do? There are lots and lots of things we can do in different ways that opportunity exists around us. We, as I said, we are far, far better off, but we need to be careful about the whole thing. And this people who are called righteous and people are called sheep, and they went on the right hand side as they were separated because they ministered in simple things, they gave without calculating, and they just met the needs of the people around them in simple gestures. Something that they could do, they did it. And that is why the master said, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was sick, you nurtured me. And they said, Lord, when did we find you hungry? When did we find you thirsty and we gave you? And Jesus said, inasmuch as you did it to the least of my brethren, you do it unto me. And that is what Mother Teresa says. Mother Teresa says, I find everyone has been made in the image of God, so I find representatives of Christ when I minister to them. When I minister to them, I can see Christ in them. And that's the perspective. They are not beggars. They are someone who are made in the image of Christ. Now, when you think of the drunkard who is lying in the gutter, everything inside you says, why should he drink? Everything inside you says, he deserves it. Everything says, that's the destiny of people who drink a lot and have no self-control. Or you could say, my, the image of God is lying in the gutters. Can I do something to restore the image of God that is in this man? Same man, two perspectives. It depends on what glasses we wear that we will decide to take some action on that particular person. There is a play that is made by which we enacted that in Colaba. One person is walking, as it were, and then suddenly falls in a ditch. Some people have dug a big ditch and the person falls. There is no light, there is no street light there, and you do not see the hole that is dug. There is no barricade around it, and accidentally this person falls inside, and there is a deep ditch and he cannot find his way out. So from this ditch he is shouting and yelling, and just then a person is passing by. So the person looks at the sound and he says, what's the matter? He said, I don't know. I was walking on the street and I didn't see this ditch and I fell down. He said, deserves your ride. You should watch. You should know where you're going. He says, but there was no light. I couldn't make out. He said, people deserve the destiny they have. They have made choices and that's where you should be. And that's it. And he began to walk away. He said, are you going to help me? He says, sorry, you deserve that. Another guy is walking past by and he hears him calling and he says, please help me. I'm falling in this ditch. He said, I could not see. It was dark over there. He said, he looks around, he says, the reason you have fallen is because there is darkness, because there is no street light in this place. I am right now going to the municipal commissioner's office and I am going to complain to them that they are going to install the light. I am going to take a morcha out and I'm going to... He said, please do that, but first take me out. He said, no, this is more important. Others will fall. I must first get the light on. And so off he walks away. And so on and so forth. And there is a politician who says, I am going to right now make an issue out of this, that how the fellow who is elected from this area allowed this ditch to be digged. I am going to take up a case against him. Another one comes and says, let's take a photograph of the work they are doing. We can put it in the newspaper. But nobody is helping out. And that is the thing. While it is humorous, the point is that there are shades of that inside us. Each one says, I don't want to get involved. They deserve it. I'd rather write a letter to the commissioner than help anyone out. And so on and so forth. Think of another. I'm talking of someone in the ditch. Someone who has fallen in the gutters because of the alcoholic habit. Think of the unborn child. Think of the issue of abortion. When you think of abortion, it is a tragedy. First of all, that unborn child is someone who cannot protect itself. It needs the protection of someone. The best protector of a child is the mother. But now mother itself is the killer. What can the child do? The mother's womb is the safest place on earth for a child. But now the mother's womb has become the tomb, isn't it? You know that there are different ways abortion is carried out. And if you know something about the way abortions are carried out, when the baby is small, they can
abort it in different ways, and as the baby grows big in the womb, then they have different methods of doing abortion. They can insert through the mother's womb a scissors by which they can cut the pieces of the baby. They cut the baby into pieces, and then they use something like a vacuum cleaner, which is 30 times more powerful than our ordinary vacuum cleaner, and suck the pieces out. And if you look at what gathers at the other end, you will find a hand and a leg and a head and all the parts of the body, absolute bloody mass that is there. Another thing they can do is they can take what is known as salt poisoning. They take a salt solution, and the baby is always in a bag, and this bag is the one from which it gets its nutrition and supply. If you see a sonograph, you can see the baby moving, the baby is happy, the baby is jumping, the baby is delighted. Then in this bag, the placenta, the doctor injects this salt solution. The salt solution causes the baby to be burned to death. It just literally burns to death. And then the mother goes through a false labor pain, and then the mother delivers a dead baby out. It is complete in every way. Everything is found, but it is dead, because that is what has happened. Sometimes there have been occasions when the baby is delivered, it is still breathing, still alive, when the doctor will just squeeze it and throw it in the waste paper basket. And they will be packing it up and discarding it. And there are many methods of abortion, all as barbaric as you think. Some of us don't even know what abortion is, because we think of abortion like, I had a boil, I squeezed out and the pus came out, and that is how the abortion is. And abortion is not a pus coming out. Abortion is the killing of a baby. Someone says a fetus has been removed. A fetus has not been removed. Fetus is a sophisticated word. A baby has been killed is a true statement that should be used. Don't use some soft peddling words, because that is not to be soft. A life has been killed. Life begins at conception. Life doesn't begin at birth. You know, God says to Jeremiah, before you were formed in your mother's womb, I knew you. Before John the Baptist was born, he was filled with the Holy Ghost in his mother's womb when Mary came to see Elizabeth the mother. So babies can be filled with the Holy Ghost while they're still in the mother's womb. And so they said, my baby leapt with joy. There is a joy that the baby experienced. There is a life in the womb that is there. So the life begins at conception, does not begin at birth. Therefore, what we do to the baby in the womb is actually killing life. And therefore, that is tragedy. Someone says, if a baby were to write a diary, what would the baby say? And the baby would say to the mother, Mommy, I am today 3 weeks old. Slowly my hands are being formed. I'm sure you would like to play with my hands, Mommy. And then he says, Mommy, I am today 6 weeks old. Now my nose is being shaped, and my nose looks like you, Mommy. I'm sure you'll be glad to know that. And then the baby goes on to write, and my hands are formed. I think I'm going to have black hair, long, thick, jet black hair. You're going to love it. My dad is going to stroke my hair and going to really like my heart. And then the baby goes on to say, Mommy, today I am 16 weeks old. Mommy, today I'm 18 weeks old. Mommy, I'm looking fair like you. Mommy, I'm looking just like you. And people are going to say, you look like your mother. And then the baby writes an entrance. Today, my mother killed me. Abortion does that. Today, my mother killed me. If a baby were to vote, abortion will surely stop. A baby is totally unprotected. Totally unprotected. Who will be there? Our God is a God of the destitute, of the helpless. Our God is a God of those who are orphans and widows and lepers and the poor. When he says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. See, he came with the agenda of the poor on his hand. He didn't come with the agenda of the middle class and the rich people. He came for the one who is downcast, the one who is depressed, one who is in prison, to set the captives free. His agenda was the poor, the destitute, the orphan, the widows. When he saw the only son of a widow dead and his bier gone, he said he was moved with compassion, and he raised up that son and gave it back to the mother. He could not bear to see that widow with the only child, was the only person that the lady had. So he had a special bias. If today God has a bias, God is partial. He's partial towards them, not towards us. Because they need us. They need him more than he needs, than we need him. So that is the crucial part of it. So abortion is really another issue. And so God is a God who has a bias. And therefore God, in this judgment, he says, if you really are my sheep or my pasture, then you got to carry this attitude. If the deciding factor of sheep and goats is not our theology, but our practice of the theology. is not an issue how much of the Bible we know, whether we know the names of the 12 apostles or whether we know the Greek and the Hebrew. It does not mean at all. It means whether we have a compassionate heart to meet the simple things in our lives. So on the day of judgment, this is the criteria. We have imaginary ideas of what will happen at the pearly gates, but this is not an imaginary. This is a parable which Jesus himself told, that on that day of judgment, this is going to happen in front of us. And how we minister to this need is going to be the deciding factor. So that is where we got to prepare our hearts. Otherwise, we will be in trouble. And the last point on that issue says, they gave it to Jesus Christ. They gave it to Jesus Christ. And as much as there is a reward for the righteous, there is a punishment for the wicked. And let's read the third point. Can we all read the few verses together? Matthew 25 verses 41 to 46 in your notes. At the count of 1, 2 and 3, we'll all read together. Are you with me? 1, 2, 3. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. And they also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? And he will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do to one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. So let me fill in the blanks for us. The punishment will be the eternal fire. The punishment will be the eternal fire. He says, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. This fire was not meant for us. This fire was meant for devil and his angels. So we will have the same destiny as the devil and his angels if we have not responded to the needs around us in this fashion. The reason for the punishment was they neglected the poor and the needy. They neglected the poor and the needy. Okay? Now, what I want to say is, they were not adulterers. They were not thieves. They were not murderers. Who are the goats? Goats are good people. Goats are good people who just did one thing. They were careless and they neglected basic giving of the people. Are you with me so far? If I can get that part understood in our hearts, that it is not an issue of whether we have committed adultery or murder or robbery. We have not done that. But the issue on which is going to be decided, this judgment is based on, is whether the faith that we have, the nature of God that we have we allowed that nature of God to be expressed itself into the lives of people. James says, some people say, I have faith, but have no works. James says, I will show you my faith by my works. He says, faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. If his faith is a system of beliefs, he said, even demons believe in God and tremble. If we believe but have no action, if we believe and no action, then our faith is as good as devil's faith. And our mentor, Victor Gladwell, he says, imagine if on our tombstone it is written like this, his system of beliefs was the same as what was demon's system of beliefs. That would be no commendation. That will be a tragedy for us. It is not the belief, it is what we do with the beliefs. Faith without works is dead, unless there are backing of works. And it is these backup works that shows our faith, that makes our faith valid or not. And if this validity is not there, our faith is a dead faith. And so they merely neglected neglected the poor and the needy. Thirdly, they lived a selfish life. They lived a selfish life. And fourthly, they were spiritually blind. Fourthly, they were spiritually blind. As I said, making fun of us at the pearly gates, he says, he's not going to ask you, did you tithe regularly or not? He's not going to ask you, did you read your Bible? He didn't ask you, did you sing in the choir? He's not going to ask you, went to church regularly. He says, When I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was thirsty, did you give me something? When I was in prison, did you visit me? And so on and so forth. That is the bottom line that will come. And the one act of ours is going to go a long way. That is going to help us in every possible way. And what is our attitude can be manifested. Let me show us what is our attitude sometimes. A certain soldier, again this is an American story, he went to the Vietnam War and then he was declared missing from action. Perhaps may have been killed by the Vietnamese in that war. And quite some time passed by and the parents were really in mourning. Then one day the news came that no, a rescue mission was arranged. They went to some enemy camp and found that he was held a prisoner of war and he has been set free and is brought out. And the news came to the parents that he is alive. And the parents were very, very thrilled. And then a few days later, they got a phone call from their son. And the son was happy to speak to their parents. And parents were thrilled back in the U.S. as he spoke from Vietnam that he has been found and he's alive. And then he says, I'm boarding so-and-so flight and I've been allowed to come back home for some period of time. And so the parents were very happy. They inquired about all the details of flights. And then the son said, I have my buddy friend who has been with me all through these days when I was in this thick of things. He was with me everywhere I went. He never left me. And he also has been rescued. Is it okay if I bring him with me? And the parents said, sure. Why not? If he's your buddy, you can surely bring him. He says, but Dad, I'm asking because I must tell you about my friend. When the rescue mission was being held, the mine exploded and my friend's leg has been gone away in that explosion, that hand grenade exploded. His one hand has gone away and one part of his side of his body has been operated upon, stitched. He doesn't look very neat and he will need constant help. And he has no one to help him. So I thought, is it okay if he came with me? He's my buddy friend. And there was a long pause at the other end. And the parent says, son, he says, see, if your buddy friend, you want to bring him, by all means bring him. And we sure will look after your buddy friend. But I don't think we can look after him for long. Perhaps maybe a few days. And then we'll find some home for him and he can stay there. And government will arrange something for him and he can be really a burden to us. And they could feel a sense of disappointment in their son the other side. And he said, okay, he said. And then phone got disconnected. The parents went to receive their son at the airport on the required flight. And everybody seemed to get out and their son didn't seem to come out. And then he saw one soldier come out. So the parents asked the soldier, he says, my son was to be in this flight. Has he come? He said, you don't know. He says, no. He says, your son is on this flight. But it is his corpse that is coming. His dead body that is coming. He said, what? He said, yes, because he committed suicide before coming here. And all we could ship is his dead body. And so the parents then went to claim the dead body. And when they opened the coffin, they saw their son who had only one leg, one hand, and a part of his face was sutured up. And they knew that he was asking about himself. He wanted to know whether his parents will accept him in this condition. Will he be a burden or will he be joyfully received? And when he saw that hesitation, he didn't feel like coming home as he was. He thought better to commit suicide rather than remain alive. Now that answer of the parents, I'm afraid may be our answer. It just tells us we are unwilling to be inconvenienced. We are unwilling to live for the less privileged. We are unwilling to open up our doors for someone else. Perhaps we may not have the capacity to look after someone who has got one leg and one hand. But what is our capacity? When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. What is it that you can think of? Anything. Anything that we can think of. Those who are less privileged than us, open up the homes. Some of you know we had to go and adopt Titus. And when we brought him home, many of our colleagues called us up and said, we are so proud of you, you brought Titus. I said, you are proud?
I want to tell you something. He said, no, we feel you have done a noble job. I said, no, I want to tell you something. When I went to those place and I asked the lady about adoption and everything else, and she said to us, the rules of Indian government is this, that first option should be given for adoption in India. And if there is no one willing to adopt any child in India, then only is offered for people abroad. So I said, why would people not adopt anyone? They should adopt. And he said, no, he said, when a child is handicapped, when a child is, you know, having sicknesses, then they don't adopt. So I said, then does anyone adopt a child who is handicapped? And he says, yes, he says, there are requests that we get from abroad where people are asking if they can adopt a handicapped child. I said, there are? He said, yeah, there is one lady who has got 6 handicapped children, and she's now got a letter from her. She wants to ask whether there's a 7th child whom she can adopt. And I came back from that place feeling I don't have that much capacity. I admire that lady who is able to have, look after 6 handicapped children and is inquiring for the 7th. There is this really, really a large capacity some people have. They look for those who they are. Mother Teresa does that. She said, I am happy to open up a home for those whom nobody wants. I am willing to take up. She challenged the government of Maharashtra saying, give me a place and I'll look after the HIV people. We have dire needs all around us. There is the, you have the HIV project right in Thane, run by the Lok Hospital. I remember 2-3 years ago, as we stood at the doors of BBC Colaba, some beggars would gather at the door, and we looked at them and we knew they were begging for, as the people are going out of the door, but we noticed they were lepers. And so as we saw them week after week standing at the door, a desire came into our hearts. Can we do something more than just give them a few coins as people are living? And so we decided to start something. We decided to give them something to eat. So one meal on Sunday afternoon. That's the capacity we have. We'll do that. So a meal was started. And so some 2-3 people in the church said, we will be happy to help. And all got together and a meal was arranged. People sponsored some money and a food was arranged. So the lepers began to increase. And at time it would go up to an average about 30 to 35. Sometime on a very big day it has got 50, but 30 to 35 lepers come. Then the ministry increased, where one nurse from the church said she would be happy to minister to the wounds of these people. And so then at the back of our church hall, at the back of our church compound, a trough was arranged. The lepers would raise their legs because all is putrefied. You cannot touch. They will put, the nurse will put a double layer of those gloves. Special medicine was bought. They would nurse the wound, clean it, bandage it, and all the rubble was put in a special bag. There's a special hospital disposal bag in which everything was put, and then that was, you know, put in the hospital disposable bin. And after the lepers lived, their whole area was washed. Even where they eat today, that area is completely washed. But every Sunday they are being fed. Then we realize that some of the needs are bigger than what we can handle. So one man has been appointed, an old man, he was nearly 70, 72 years old. He is willing to take them during the week to the hospital, because when one of us goes with the lepers, then the lepers are not ill-treated in the hospital. The hospital people, government people sort of send them off. And we stand as their guardians, and then they are admitted, and then they are treated for whatever ailments are required. Then we found that these people are Telugu speaking, and we said, would you like for us to conduct a Telugu church service? And the lepers agreed. And so now we have, after the meal is over, then there is a Telugu service being held, and you will be surprised, then we take offering, and these lepers kind of put money in the offering as well. We don't want to deprive them of their offerings. Of course, whatever they gather is plowed back into their own ministry, whether buying medicines or buying food or whatever. But nevertheless, we do take that money that comes from them, encouraging them also to learn to give unto the Lord. And they joyfully sing, sitting in the compound, they do that. And there are people who relentlessly work, and they then lay hands on them and pray over them. Now, one of the couples that is there, Anil and Mira Nair, and they... Anil and Mira and I are faithfully working, but last year May, Mira had a baby, so she could not come because she delivered a baby, and for after about 3 months when she became mobile again, she came one day to the church service, and then she showed the baby to all the lepers. Lepers were very careful. They looked at the baby, they smiled at the baby, showed, make faces, but nobody touched the baby because they know they should not touch the baby. And so that was good. But the following week, when they all gathered, And when the time came for the meal was over, the lepers arranged for a packet to be given to Anil Nair. And when Anil Nair opened the packet, it was a dress for the baby. And it had a gold ring for the baby. And Anil Nair wept and wept. He could not handle. He says, these people have given me more than I can handle. He said, they are so grateful for the small act that is done. He couldn't handle himself. He wept. He says, you do not know. They are, after all, at the end of the day, they are people who are made in the image of God. They have a heart. They are people. And we have heard from our apostle who says people are important. He says it again and again and again and again for the last 10 years. And we have failed to hear people are important. Unless that is understood by us, we will remain in our ivory towers, filled with apathy, privileged and yet complaining, privileged and yet murmuring, privileged and yet criticizing, and not looking at these people who, for the small gesture once a week being done, they are so grateful that they can honor. We will not give such gifts, but they will give. I know when I go to the Hindi and the Tamil congregation, sometimes I have to substitute and I have to go. And I go to their home, they don't even have a place to sit. They make do some place for me to sit. And then they will run out and they will get me the biggest Pepsi they can. And I know they can't even afford a cup of tea which may be worth 1 rupee. They gave me that big Pepsi. And I know it is out of their sheer meager money that they have, they want to honor because I've come. And I feel so terrible that that is their heart of gratitude. That is their heart of honoring. And so our smallest gesture is going to go a long way. And if they can offer us a Pepsi, why are we reluctant in our hearts to care for someone who they are so honoring to those who may come to labor among them? Why can't we do something towards that side? That is why on that day of judgment, it won't be surprising if this is the posture that is taken by the Lord when He sits there and divides the sheep and the goat. And He says, He expects us. There is a sense of expectancy. And if that expectancy is not fulfilled, He will separate the sheep and the goats. And He will say, for you is reserved the fires of hell, which was meant for only Satan and his demons. Because He is so angry, because we fail to respond to those gestures that are there. We could do that. And someone else, like, you know, this Jackie Pullinger came, and you remember that. And then, you know, Ruth Powell came from Jackie Pullinger's church. And Ruth Powell used to share a lot of stories about the work among the drug addicts and work among the prostitute that was going on there. And she built in so much faith, she made it saying, it's possible, you can do it. You can. That was the way Ruth Powell said it. So that inspired Esme and Florian. They said, let us do something about it. Both were ladies and very fearful, so didn't know how to go about. But they decided to go to VT station and they went on a prayer walk. They said, let's just pray. That's what Ruth Powell says. First go for a prayer walk. So they went around walking around praying, walking around praying. They went a few weeks just to pray around. And they said, as you pray around, the Lord will give you some burden. And as they're praying around, walking at the church gate and VT station, what they saw was these fellows who polished the shoes, fellows who carry those baskets of these vendors who, you know, bring things up, small lads, urchins. And I felt a desire, why don't we do something for these urchins? And so these two ladies gathered one fellow and called him. And he's looking at these two ladies, why are they talking at him? And then he said, you know, you have your friend, you bring your friends. So four fellows came, rough fellows, absolutely, you know, roadside slum dwellers, filthy language, filthy habits, filthy dressing. Absolutely uncouth, you know, you name it and it's all there. But people. And so they said, they gave them bananas to eat. And so they took the bananas and kind of make the banana skin fly. And their heart sank because they didn't want the banana skins to be thrown anywhere. They thought somebody might oppose and they'll get into trouble. Anyway, they quickly gathered the banana skins and threw in the waste paper basket. And they said to them, if we come next week and give you something to eat, will you bring your friends? And they said, yes, we'll bring. And so next week they went, they gathered one fellow, he gathered others, and they gave them something to eat. So every week they went at a fixed time, fixed place, and they began to give something to eat. And then little by little a small group of urchins gathered. And we were discussing, and I said, just giving to eat may not be adequate. Why don't you give
something to them to read or write or learn something. So they decided to go there, and one of the days they said to the boys, would you like to read or write? And they called them Didi. Ha Didi, we like you to teach us read and write. So they took books and they gave them books, and they had neatly covered it and gave it to them and said, this is your book, and tell us your name. So they told them, and how people wrote the names of the books. And then the children were so thrilled. They said, we always wanted to go to school. We never were able to go to school. Now we can hold our book. So thrilled, so proud to hold that book and to see that joy on that face. And so that's what they did. And they went week after week, taught them to read and write and, you know, basic things, taught them songs, taught them gospel songs. Once a year, they take them out of picnic, give them a pair of clothes, so on and so forth. They did that and they were very happy. One day, two men were passing by. They stood there, watched the whole thing. And our people are concerned that these two people might be some militant fellows and may cause trouble. But when the meeting got over, these two men said, we are from the Rotaract Club and we see you are doing a good job. Would you mind if we came and gave clothes to the people? He said, sure, you can bring clothes and give it away. We have no monopoly on them. And so promptly next Sunday they came with cartons full of clothes and they called one by one and they gave them, and many of the clothes fitted those boys, but some clothes were not fitting them and some children didn't have clothes. So they said they'll come again next week and bring the clothes. So next week our volunteers went, and to our utter surprise, not one child came to our ministry. And so they had to go around gathering them. Then they said, why didn't you come today? They said, are those people going to come? Then we don't want to come. They said, which people? They said, those who came last week. So he said, what's the problem? They gave you clothes. What is your problem? He says, what? They gave clothes. You saw the way they called us. Hey, Idra. He said, they're insulting us. They're not calling us. Not the way you love us. And suddenly our people felt cold, because not realizing we could have also made the same mistake of calling them in a rough way. By the grace of God, our people had called them nicely and given them dignity and honor. Then those children said, actually, Didi, many people come here, but nobody loves us the way you love us. And that really made our volunteers' heart melt. He said, without us realizing it, we are communicating the right message. Some of you know a girl called Roxanne, a girl from Parsi Faith belonging to the Kulaba Church, now is in Dubai. And her mother is a very typical Parsi Finicky in many natures. And one of the days, and Roxanne was a part of this church gate team, one of the days Roxanne was passing through church gate with her mother when she saw these two or three children at the tea stall and they were buying an ice candy. And they saw Roxanne and they all surrounded us and Didi and all these urchins in their pathetic clothing, you know. And the mother looked at Roxanne and looked at his children, and Roxanne nearly died because she thought, my mother will now raise her hand and, you know, really whack them. And these children, before the mother could do anything, one of the child gave Roxanne an ice candy. Now, in Roxanne's house, right from childhood till the old age, you never eat an ice candy. It is dangerous. Most dangerous thing to eat is an ice candy because it is, you know, full of germs. And now to pick up an ice candy from one of these kids' hands and to eat it is terrible. And she thought now her mother will shout and that will be the end of the day. And she also thought if she did not eat it, then the children's heart will be broken. She was really in a catch-22 situation. But nevertheless, the children so lovingly gave it to her. So she took that ice candy. She said thank you to them. And then she began to walk and the mother began to walk. And the children said, Didi, khauna. And she in her mind says, Lord, bless this candy. In Jesus' name, amen. And she just ate it. She said, I will perish if I perish, but I'm going to eat it. I don't want to disregard their love and their honor. And she ate it and she never felt sick. But funnily says, my mother never spoke a word. And then she said, suddenly her mother was inquiring, what is this? And she told, I come every Sunday afternoon and I meet them. That is why they are so friendly. Mother saying, you are doing a good work. Please continue to do that. And Roxanne was the girl who, when she got married on a Saturday evening, on Sunday, she took biryani to church gate station and gave it to all the children. They are the one who really celebrated her wedding day with her husband, with those people right over there. And so that is the heart some people have, because you make their day as you do that work. What I want to say is, I'm giving these names to say anybody can do it. Ladies can do it. Women can do it. A one who comes from a difficult background can also do it. One, anybody, even you can minister lepers, and whatever you do will never go waste. You will get some honor in this land and plenty of honor in the land to come. There is the reward of the righteous. You will inherit the kingdom. If that has been your prayer, I want to inherit the kingdom, then this is the way to inherit. If you are really a sheep, the issue between a sheep and a goat is when someone is hungry, when someone is thirsty, when someone is in trouble, you minister that. The two questions at the bottom of your page is this. Conclusion. If only we had known that helping others was helping Jesus. If only we had known that serving others was serving Christ. Perhaps those people mentioned the passage, it was too late for them. But for us, it is never too late. We can start even now. You agree with me? So can I suggest form teams of 2x2? And then both of you in teams of 2, pray. And whatever you feel before God, you make your decision to pray to God. And whatever comes to your heart, whatever you feel God is putting on your heart, you decide today or this week, I am going to start something in your heart. To the degree you feel God's word has spoken to you, to that degree you can put. You notice one more thing in the church in Kulaba, that the offering that comes, we take a special offering for Sahara, that is the work among the poor. The offering that comes has now just crossed 2 lakhs for the last year. The point is, when you start doing, no, money also will start coming. In other words, we are encouraging people to give 3.3%. Some of us are giving, some are not giving. But when you have a tangible project, you feel like giving. You will feel, our people, volunteers, not only go to Churchgate Station to do the work, then finally when they get moved, they only end up putting some money. Because now they know what they're giving is going genuinely to someone to help. Sometimes when you're going in a rickshaw and at the traffic junction, suddenly one beggar comes, you know, shoves his hand to the door. And you do not know whether money I give him, is he going to go to him, or if there is some cartel over there which are going to take away all his money. Is he going to get the money or not? You feel awkward to give and you hesitate to give. That is understandable. But now when you're involved in a project, you know that this money or this food or this clothing is going directly to the beneficiary. There is no cartel involved. A genuine person is being healed, and you will be able to see that result, and your heart will be thrilled and rejoice at what can happen. Perhaps you can set the way, and you can be the model that can set the way for others to follow. And I pray that we will be a church which will be able to do something. Own up something beyond yourself. One person whom you can make the life better. Let me close with this last illustration. Some of you may not know, because in our beaches, we normally don't see what is known as a starfish. Have you are aware of a star-shaped fish? It comes in many colors. Now the starfish is a fish that gets washed onto the beaches, and they need water to survive. If there is no water, as long as they are moist, they remain alive. But once there is no water for 3-4 hours, then they harden up and they die. And thousands and millions of starfishes get stranded on beaches and they die. And one young boy was walking on the beach and he saw starfish that was stranded on the beach. And he saw it was still wriggling. So he picked it up and he flung it into the water. And as he walked a little further, he saw another starfish. So he bent down, picked it up and threw it in the water. And an old man was sitting over there on the side. So he asked the boy, "What are you doing?" He said, "Sir, I saw the starfish stranded. So I just put back in the water that it may live." And the old man said, "You're wasting your time. There are millions on this beach. And it will make no difference if you put a starfish in the water." At which point the boy had reached one more starfish. He picked it up and he says, "It made a difference for that one. It made a difference for that one." If each one of us can throw 4 or 5 starfishes, it will make a difference for 4 or 5. But if everyone did that, it will make a difference for the millions. The answer is when someone starts with one. And I think that one must be us, that we can start. Amen. I'll just close in prayer, but maybe I'll give you 2-3 minutes. You pray in teams of 2, and then I will close in prayer. Change my heart, O God. Make it ever true. Change my heart, O God. May I be like you. Change my heart, O Lord. Change my heart, O God. Make it ever true.
Change my heart, O God. May I be like you. You are the potter. I am the clay. Mold me and make me. This is what I pray. Change my heart, O God. Make it ever true. Change my heart, O God. May I be like you. This is our desire, O Lord, that we may be more like you, that we may have our heart in the right place, that we may be filled with compassion just as you were filled with compassion. You saw the sheep as without a shepherd, and you reached out to them, and you wanted workers so that they could go and be sheep, that they could go to the sheep and become shepherds of the sheep. Lord, you went out to those who were destitute, those who were poor, those who were hungry, those who were in trouble. You sought them out and you ministered to them. Those who were sick, you prayed and you healed them. Those who were demonized, you set them free. Lord, you were always for those who were outcast and downcast and depressed and discouraged, in bondage, and you set them free, Lord. I pray that you give us the same heart. You go for the lost sheep. You left the 99 behind and went for the lost sheep, Lord God. And you rejoiced when the lost sheep was brought back. Rejoice when the lost coin was found. You rejoiced when the lost son came back home. Father, enable us in our hearts to have a special bias to those who are lost, to those who are less privileged, to those who are poor, to those who need our help, whether they are hungry spiritually or physically, whether they are thirsty spiritually or physically, whether they are in bondage, whether they are into grips of some habits or patterns. Enable us, Lord, to do something to set them free. Enable us to be tolerant. Enable us to be filled with grace, filled with compassion for them. Lord, even as people followed you, you said them, feed them. You told your disciples, you feed them. Lord, you had a compassion even for their physical appetite. And you ministered to them, Lord. God, pray that our same heart will be there with us, that we may reach out to some people, that we will, as it were, adopt a group of people, adopt a community, adopt some place, adopt some section of society, and Lord, minister to them faithfully, regularly, week after week, in some systematic manner. Pray that our capacity will be enlarged to reach out to them. And this afternoon, Lord, even as many of us have prayed and have prayed some decision, I pray that you will seal that decision of ours and help us, Lord. I pray that something will emerge from our talk this evening. Help us, we pray. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.